Nice weekend so far.
I don't care if you have a nice weekend. About to get penguined. Let's roll the intro.
Hooray.
I'm doing the button for that. Let's roll the intro.
Roll the intro.
Chris and Hex is Lily's penguin. Chris and Hex is Lily's banter. Chris and Hex is Lily's banter. You're not singing. You said you'd sing.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Sing.
Chris and Hex is Lily's banter.
Chris and Hex is Lily's banter.
Chris and Hex is Lily's in the banter.
Hello,
banter
everyone, power. And welcome to Hex Penguin, the only show where we've got a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles homemade theme tune of sorts.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, did we talk about the bot? Have we got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle bot in our thing? We haven't. You should add that real quick because we've got to talk about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles bot because it's basically amazing. Hello everyone. This is X Penguin. This is the show where we talk about things we thought was interesting in leaks this week from a gamer's point of view. I said that the opposite around as usual. I've got a cup of tea. It's here. There you go. I spilled tea on my desk earlier as well.
I've got a cup of tea too. Please ignore the Big Bang Theory mug. I don't like that show. I just don't like to throw out perfectly good mugs, you know?
I do.
That's a big mug as well.
I'm like, fuck you, mug. Fuck you, mug. Before we go any further, there's this Mastodon account where like they take random things and turn it into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles logos. And it's great. it's just, I can't help reading them. I mean, Michael, Levy, Baron, Levy. 2010 in Irish music. It's just fucking fantastic. I don't even know how it works. How do you make it say things? You have to add it or something.
So they do just random Wikipedia articles with the right number of syllables to make it work. But if you go into the account itself, it will give you a link to like the components that make it up. One of which is the graphic design. So it's I can't remember where it goes, glench.com/TMNT. Wow. So then you can sort of make your own and then share your own.
So big balls and little winkies. Big balls and little winkies. That's you know what? That's an instant bookmark. That is, I've bookmarked that.
Is, yeah.
That's the best thing ever. That is literally the best thing I've ever seen anywhere.
Yeah,
I can delete that. So if you want my Big Balls and Little Winkies logo, you can have that. Why isn't everything Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? It's based on an XKCD comic. Oh, it is. Mm. It is based on this. Okay. Right. Yeah, okay. That's confusing for me. Mm. I'll leave that open so we can add that to the show notes anyway.
Yeah, it's just like
it's the time. This is what we're here for.
And I think, to be fair, you know, I think not only does the Mastodon account deserve a shout out, but Bots in Space also does, as an entire Mastodon server. It's botsin.space, right? And it's an entire Mastodon instance dedicated to bots, unsurprisingly, but not like your bots that just sort of spam accounts with real estate information and all that kind of stuff. It's like they have all kinds of ones. Like, for example, there are some accounts that do random ASCII art and that kind of thing. Some of them just do, you know, like BBC News headlines and all that kind of stuff. But it's a Mastodon instance worth checking out if you're looking to fill your timeline with some non-human content. But there are some really good bots that people have put together on Mastodon.
He's following one person. Who's he following? I take it that's the creator he's following. Okay, that's probably the thing. Yeah, it's fucking great. It's awesome, and it's basically the we're gonna redo all the artwork for everything we do from now on. Be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, it's the only right thing to do, really. And does anyone here not love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? I think it's like a universal thing. Everyone kind of like, yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, you might not love the cartoon, but you might love the movie. I bet we all have some Turtles love, though, right? The comic book was excellent, the new run, but no one cares about that.
For me, it was the SNES game, and I never actually played it on the SNES itself. I only ever played it on the emulators, which were available like for ages ago. Mm. But that's a really good like 4-player couch co-op game, and you get to choose all the different turtles, and it's really good.
You can choose one of any four of them. I feel like they did four turtles on purpose because they knew that most consoles was 4 players, or is most consoles 4 players because there was 4 turtles? Maybe that's the secret link to everything. Okay, yeah. I like the original. I like the 80s movies. The new ones I can take or leave. The 80s movies was cool. Anyway, we should probably talk about games we've played. Chris, Chris, do you want to talk about Minecraft, Chris? Do you want to talk about Minetest? Sorry.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Minecraft. No. Minecraft, I've never actually played, but I don't have any inclination to. Minetest, however, a wonderful game. Just for those of you that are unaware of it, minetest.net, I think, is where you get it. I hope I'm right in that. I don't want to send someone off to the wrong place. But it is an open source voxel builder game. It's kind of like an engine, so you can actually build games on top of it, you know, in this engine. But quite frankly, I just like to build stuff on it. And quite some time ago, Hex put up a little server on a DigitalOcean droplet. And since then, we've been building a little world that I call Hexico, because it sounds a bit like Mexico, but it's, you know, so clever. And basically, we've got like a very random, eclectic mix of various types of castles and Mr. Blobby sculptures down on sea level. But you can also take this train that goes up really, really high up into the sky, and we've been building this neon village. And you can see there I'm wiring it up. And basically, it's a village where the pavements actually light up. And a lot of the buildings are black or white with like neon trim, which is really quite good. And it's so addictive and charming and wonderful, and sort of an example as to how open source is just like a really good sort of community get together.
I'm mostly interested because this is my server. And I like have fads where I'll play Minetest for like a week and then not touch it for like 2 months, right? So like, and that's what I'm currently one of those where I'm not really loading in. So apparently I've never seen any of this shit. This is apparently on my server. So I'm a bit concerned. I'm going to go in. I'll be like, where is this strange new world? You know,
Well, you go to the main train station, and then you go up to the one that's slightly up. You just go up, catch trains that go up. That's the general rule of thumb, and you'll get there.
Okay, so catch trains that go up or fly, I suppose, is also fine.
But you can also fly, yeah.
There's a lot of Chris just building stuff here. We should probably scoot. There we go, away from Chris building stuff. Yeah, this is not the world I left behind. There's my Mr. Blobby. Yes, there's my Mr. Blobby.
Yeah,
there's my Mr. Blobby. That is quite the level. Yeah, that I did not.
Yeah, we've got a very extensive staircase network as well, and trains. Yeah, so the train.
Is there still a sign behind that fence that says Cybrus is a cunt? Is that still a thing?
I believe so, because I didn't want to touch anyone else's stuff. You just but built also, it. Yeah, like it's kind of like, well, if someone new to the server came along and that was like the first thing they saw,
I'd be all right with that. It'd like, be on brand as fuck for me, wouldn't it? It'd be fine.
But, no, the Mr. Blobby is on brand.
Mr. Blobby's pretty on brand.
We love Cybrus, really.
Well, no, we do. But that was history. It was part of an escalating war between Cybrus and Rob. It was, you know.
Yeah.
It was.
Well, now it's part of the castle museum. You can go into it and you can view the sign. But
I'm gonna go and view the sign after this after this podcast. I'm gonna go and check it out. But this is I didn't this is all new to me, so I'm gonna go and who changed my sign? We'll have a look. But yeah, we should probably stop talking about Minetest, because we talk about Minetest a lot, so we should probably stop talking about Minetest at this point. Minetest is a thing.
Yeah,
I got confused then because I can see Chris on the screen on his video, and he started talking. Well, and I was like, "Is it out of sync?" And I was like, "No, I'm just watching his video." I want to see I want to see Hamish stream Minetest as well. What a great idea, Paul. Sorry.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. No, that is definitely. Yep. Oh, come on, Hamish. It's Minetest. It's not like it's Minecraft.
Yeah, it's not Minecraft.
And you're like, and I bet Hamish would love the electronics of it all, and the building and the wiring up of switches and all that kind of stuff, and the train networks. You know, it's there are mechanics to it that aren't just Lego. Like, I like the Lego bit of it. Like, I like building a neon village in the sky, but Hamish might like, you know, wiring it up with all the fancy electricity and switches and stuff.
I think Hamish should build a beautiful princess castle, and he'd have a beautiful princess molded at the top or something. Either way, yes, that's what I think is happening.
We don't have a beautiful princess castle as of yet. I think the closest we've got is maybe Cybrus's Thundercats castle.
That is pretty cool. Is that Thundercats castle? Mm. Is that on that server? Cybrus has been building.
I think so, yeah.
I think he built a Castle Grayskull. Is that not the one you're talking about?
Oh, yeah. Is that not... That's no, He-Man, isn't it?
He-Man, sorry. He-Man is sacred. You can't fuck about He-Man. Just for that, I'm going to move on. I'm going to talk about a game I want to talk about then, all right? And again, I promise, stream, I'm not going to bang on about this, but I need, for anyone who missed it, right? I know a lot of people watch this show or listen to this show that don't watch the rest of the channel, so I need you guys to know that Cogmind may be the greatest, most beautiful roguelike I've ever played. And I've played a lot of roguelikes, and I like a lot of roguelikes, but this one takes it to the next level. It is so fucking ridiculously good. I've literally played 12 hours of it over 3 days. It was great. Your basic premise of the game is that you wake up in a scrapyard in the basement, and you've got to go up and out to win. Essentially, you have to leave the complex. So to do that, you start off as you're an AI, so you have to like assemble parts to make yourself. So you start assembling parts. And then you make your way out. And there's lots of ways that you can do stealth, you can do shields. There's lots of different builds you can have. But it's a combination of dealing with stuff you pick up on the way and knowing which stuff is worth trading for to sort of get a build that works. It is a lovely game that I enjoy very much. And I think it is the best roguelike I've played. But that said, I started learning how to play NetHack recently, so maybe I'll change my mind. But yeah, at the moment, at the moment, I'm saying that yes, this is the best one. It's so good, it's excellent. But yeah,
it looks beautiful.
I mean, it's all like very low. It's all like 32 by 32 pixel blocks. I think it's 32 by 32. Anyway, they're very low pixel blocks and chunky ASCII characters. I think it looks lovely, and it's like very expressive with its artwork. Like the lighting is like colored blocks and things, but the way it works is very expressive, and I really do like it. I think it's lovely. So yeah, I can't really praise it enough, to be honest. I made a video just praising it, and and I've done a stream praising it, and I just feel like I should do it again. But it seems to be one guy making it who's been developing it forever, pretty much. But the game, the thing that's sort of striking about it is the levels of complexity that sneak up on you. Like you every time you level up, you get another slot. So these on the right hand side of the screen, you see the slots there. And every time you level up, you can pick which category to add a slot to. You can go all power, all build, all utility, all weapons, or you can spread it out, which is what I tend to do. It's fascinating how much diversity there is. Like you can literally have a build like built to be a tank. You can drive around as a tank with tracks and weapons and shields. Or you can build for stealth, or even build for hacking, and just hack all the computers you encounter. It's so much versatility, such a simple interface. And I say simple, but it's quite complicated, obviously. But all the controls and things are very easy to learn. I switched to playing keyboard only mode after a few hours, and it just feels great to play. It's really good. Can't recommend it enough. So
you picked it up, the controls and all that, pretty quickly then. It wasn't too complicated.
It's HJKL, which is Vim navigation. And then if I pick something up that goes in my inventory, I just press control and then like 1 through 10, 1 through 0 really, to select the item. And then the control is the equip and unequip button, right? So if I hit control 1, it would equip in this picture the tank tread in this picture. And then if I want to unequip it, I press control. And then when I equip something, it gets a letter rather than a number. So if I want to unequip it, I just put, if say if it goes on J, I'd push control J to unequip it and put it back to my inventory. And then I can hold down Alt and then the number, and it drops it. So it's very, even though it sounds complicated, it's actually very simple. And then to fire, I hit F, and then I can use my arrow, my arrow keys and my Vim Nav keys to target things. Then I hit F again to confirm. It's very simple played, but the versatility offers is immense because the builds you can have. The secret really is in getting the build that works. So I really liked it. But yeah, I think depending on how you feel about roguelikes, I am planning a video on roguelikes that I'm hoping to get out before Christmas, but I've got to play a few to get some footage and stuff. But I am planning a video on talking about roguelikes as a general thing. But I love roguelikes, and this is the best one I've played at all so far. And I'm really looking forward to like deep diving into more complex ones. It's just sort of it's sort of like reminding me how good a roguelike can be, because I've been playing Tales of Majael recently, which is another roguelike, but it very much is combat based, and because of that, it's almost like, as soon as you know how it works, it's just a case of getting through it. And because of that, I find after about 10 hours of it, I'm like, I'm kind of done with it. You know, I kind of feel like there's not a lot else I'm going to see. Even though it's excellent, I'm more interested in the weird quirkiness that Cogmind has to offer than the pure combat that Tales of Majael offers. So, I'm already banging on about roguelikes too much, so I'm going to stop now. But Cogmind good is the crux of the thing to say here. But is it something that, I mean, you saw the stream. Is it something you want to play, Chris?
Mm-hmm. I do like roguelikes, but I'm one of those people that likes roguelikes for a couple of hours and then and then moves on to the next one. I mean, I might give it a go. What's the price tag on it?
It is. Now, Drew was mad at me for not playing it, so he actually gifted me a copy because he was like, play it! Just in the end up with that. But it's £15.49, and it's been on sale for down to as low as £11.61. But honestly, if you write roguelikes, I have no doubt you'll get your money's worth out of it. I mean, I've already played nearly 13 hours of it, and I've only had it less than a week. I've had less than a week and I played that, so I'm going to play a lot more of that, absolutely.
Nice.
But yeah. But anyway, rather than me going down a deep hole of talking about roguelikes forever, should we talk about Open Arena Live?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Good time to slot so, in. What is it?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, we've all heard of Open Arena. It is the Quake 3 Arena's open source project. And what openarena.live does is it allows you to play Open Arena in the browser. Just in the browser, like it was a Flash game, like it was any other kind of game. And what you can do is, even though there are people about who don't necessarily have Open Arena, Open Arena is a piece of cake to install, to be honest. It's available in every distribution I've ever used. But then, you know, there might be, I don't know, Windows users, people at work, or that kind of thing. And it just allows you to put, so you start up openarena.live. You go through the process of setting up a server, which is about as easy as it is in any other game. And then it gives you a link, a browser link. And then you just give that link to everyone who you want to play. And you jump in and you start shooting each other. It's really as simple as that. They've got the usual game modes, capture the flag, free-for-all, deathmatch, team deathmatch, others, the domination and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, we tried it before the show, which is why I was a little bit late launching the show. It runs. I mean, the game is. I mean, Open Arena at this point, it's not a difficult game, you know, to get. It's not something that you have problems running on any piece of hardware. But it's nice that you get a link. You click the button. You click the link, and then it all happens in the web browser. It takes the first time you load it. It does a little bit of caching, and it takes a little bit longer than you'd expect, because it's obviously downloading the entire game. Now, my connection, it took about a minute and a half, which sounds like not a long time, but when you're watching a scroll bar, it feels like longer. it works beautifully, doesn't it? I mean, it really does. I had a problem because I do have a Vim plugin, so I had to disable that to get the game to work. But other than that, it's beautiful. It works very well.
Mm. And it's a game I quite enjoy. It's one of those games you can drop in, have a bit of a shoot around for 10, 20 minutes, and and move on. So I'm quite fond of those games where they try where it is just a very simple game in its essence, because it kind of makes it accessible to people that aren't necessarily big gamers or very good gamers like myself.
Now I would say I'm usually hating on Quake 3 clones. I'm usually giving them a lot of shit, but I actually think a web-based Quake 3 clone, this is actually I think a good use for the engine. I mean, this is something new. This is like filling the void left by Quake Live. It's letting people jump in and play. I feel like it's a great use. Like if you've got a few mates, you just want to play Quake, or you want to play Quake 3. This is a good use case. Whereas usually when I see these Quake 3 clones, I'm just rolling my eyes because I'm like, this is not good. But in this case, no, I think this is an absolutely valid use for it, which is unusual thing to say.
I suppose that's. Oh my word! Open Arena is.
No, I mean the Open Arena Live.
I have no idea. It only recently came to my attention. I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, really. So I can't say for certain.
It's very cool.
I don't know.
I'd like to know how old it is, because I feel like it should be new, because I'm sure I would have heard of something like this in the past, or people would have pushed it for me. Yeah.
But I think this is one of those sort of like a lot of the advantages of open source software in general, and for this instance, I'll include games, is that there are a lot of advantages that aren't immediately apparent there and then. But this is a prime example of it. It's like no one would know that having a game as like freely available as open as Arena can then transition into new and interesting ways to play the game without having to go through a quagmire of licensing regulations and all that kind of thing. Like people can just jump in and be like, hey, you know what? Here's a game that you can mess around with. Let's just you know, play it through a browser. Let's just, you know, make it a new, you know, make a new version of it, or make a new, you know, be creative with it.
Yeah, it allows them. It allows them the freedom to do something interesting with the code, rather than like in the Quake Live is a great example. With Quake Live, I like Quake Live for all the reasons that this seems like a good idea to me, and it's no longer available, so I can't play it. But because like the engine is open, they're going, oh fuck it, we'll make our own version of Quake Live, because obviously there's a void to fill. So yeah, I'm in favor of this. I'm still shocked that Quake Live is no longer a thing, though. It seems odd to me that they cancelled that in the end. But anyway, that's a separate thing. I thought someone was talking about Open Arena and then got distracted. But yeah, it's very cool. I could actually see myself playing this. I could actually see myself playing, like, one night people in chat just throw a link and I'm like, all right then, let's go, let's do this, you know? I could see this having a place in a community. But yeah, I'm in favour of it, which feels weird to say.
It's kind of like one good use I can really think of using it is for like if you're streaming, you could take on challenges, and it's completely, you don't get version hell. I don't know what that's like with Open Arena. I've never had it myself, so I think it's quite good in that regard. I think Open Arena is also available as a flat pack, for what that's worth. But you can just take on challenges. You can be like, you know what, just off the bat, it doesn't matter if you've got the game, I'm just gonna, you know, it's almost like open source Stadia
Yeah, I mean, it's not, but no, I know what you're saying. You can just like hit the button and go play. You know, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, I mean, to be clear, like the way these things work, this particular thing works, is it's not streaming the game from anywhere. It sends you like a packet of code, like designed to run inside the browser as a browser-based application. So you're not actually streaming any content. It's you just literally fast streaming the assets to your computer and then like loading them up sequentially. It's not streaming in like the same way Stadia is, but yeah, it's certainly a great way of doing it. And then I think browser-based games are great. I always have liked browser games. We don't seem to have... There was a... I think in like 2000 and like... I want to say like 2006, there was a few of them. And they all seemed great to me. And then they all sort of like just vanished over time, which is a shame. I played a lot.
Oh, like Winter Bells. Oh, do you remember Winter Bells?
No, what's Winter Bells?
Winter Bells is a game where... I remember it very fondly because it has a background. The background music sounds very much like Pachelbel's Canon in D, which I do quite enjoy. If not, it's a little bit overplayed for classical music. But you're a rabbit and you have to jump on bells and you have to keep going up and up and up and up and up. And the bells disappear when you jump on it, and you just try and get a high score. It's a little bit, I think it's procedurally generated in terms of where the bells are placed. It's just a charming, beautiful little game. Oh, there you got it. Oh,
yeah, I found it, but then I tried to use WSAD and forgot how to vim plug and just closed the page. So I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah, no, there was things like Cartoon Network. This is going back to like 2006. Run this weird Cartoon Network game that was like Ben 10 and a bunch of others, and it was called Fusion Fall or something. I think it was called Fusion Frenzy. Fusion Fall. It had its weird name. It was like a whole MMO. But like streamed through your browser and super like not simple, but like very streamlined mechanics. I really liked that. I thought it was a really cool idea, and I was interested in technology. And then there was Wizards 101, which started as a browser thing and moves on to a full application. There's a few things like it that I'm interested in, but it seems like the technology kind of never went anywhere. And I feel like phone apps are probably the reason that didn't go anywhere. They probably got replaced with apps. But the idea was very cool. I liked it a lot. But things are under the heading of things we played, though, without talking about Cogmind, I did play a little bit Undermine this week, and I made a bit of a video about it. And do you know much about Undermine? Did you follow the video on that one?
Not this one, no. Yeah. Actually, I'm completely new to this one.
Yeah, it's man. I lasted an hour. I thought it feels like more. I lasted an hour. It's fine. It's the most fine game I've played. It's like it doesn't really stand out in any way. The idea is it's like a road light where you like you jump through a hole, you go through a mine, you try and defeat bosses and progress through the dungeon. When you die, you get to keep some of the cash you gained. You go back to the town, you unlock like assets and items to help you do better the next time. And it's just a continual loop, which is a fine idea. I mean, a lot of games have done this kind of loop. Like I'm trying to think of games. There was that one where you shopkeeper, Moonlighter, was it? Yeah. And then there's also Wizard of. Yeah. There's a few games like it anyway with this same thing. But this one is the most unremarkable. It's fine. The graphics look okay. The gameplay is okay, but there's absolutely nothing about it that was outstanding enough to make me want to continue playing. It was just fine. That I can't even pinpoint what was wrong with it, like that made me not want to play anymore. But it's, I think it's just the fact that it does everything. It just does everything okay, and I can't have any strong feelings about anything it does, which is a shame. But yeah,
I mean, that's a heck of a trailer. I mean,
it looks good. It looks fun. I was on board with the trailer, and then when I started playing, I was kind of on board. But the mechanics, like when you move, it feels kind of sluggish. Like you're just kind of like rolling and a little bit like you can't roll out the way. You have to like step out the way and jump out the way, and it feels just sluggish. And the combat is the main part of the game, and it's also the bit that feels the most average. So yeah, I'm not impressed with it, unfortunately. Yeah, and Scratch is just pointing out that Fusion Frenzy was an arcade game on the original Xbox. Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah, it was great. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Was Fusion Fall then? Maybe, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, Undermine is just fine, and I just. Unfortunately, it wasn't fine enough for me to keep playing, but so I don't think I recommend it. But it's in early access. If they do pick up the combat and make it a little bit tighter, I could see it being turned from an average game to a fun game. But at the moment, it's a hard not recommend from me. That one is. So I just thought
you might say it's underwhelming.
Underminers, underwhelming. It's under everything. Oh. Unfortunately. The cursed update, yeah. I feel bad because obviously the art's good and the idea's good. I feel like there's a good game in there, but it's like it's just so underbaked. Like anyone who plays it could just go, "This is fine," but no one can be like hyped up about, like excited by it. There's so many other games you should play. Like, you know, there are so many other games to play. But the pixel work's nice. It's nice enough there.
Look good in that regard.
It does. But what's your next game on the list, Chris? Anyway, what's your next game on the list?
What's my next game on the list? Paint the Town Red. Right, this is a game that has been in my library now for, I don't know, the best part of a year or something. But I finally got around to playing it on stream. I think it was last night, in fact. It's very much as it looks like on the tin. So it puts you in various scenarios. You start off in a biker bar. And your aim is to start a bar fight and take out as many people with you before you eventually succumb to the follies of death. And it's kind of fun because you just start the game, you know, you get in level, everyone's doing their old thing, and then you like glass someone over the back of their head, and then the whole bar erupts into a cartoonish display of violence, and then you find all these objects around, so you can, you know, hit someone over the head with a guitar that the band is playing, or bar stools, or pool cues, or, you know, various sort of, you know, random bits and pieces that you actually find in level. And it's a great deal of fun because it is just mad chaos. But I do have to say that once you get over the initial enjoyment of just thonking someone on the back of their head with a bar stool, it kind of does wane a little bit.
Right.
It's like, and there's the prison riot one, there's the one in a disco, you got the pirate one there. It's not bad, but the price tag on it, I'm just going to look it up now, but I think I picked it up when it was on sale, and when it was a bit more, it's £11.39. So what's that in?
You could buy Cogmine for that. You could buy Cogmine for that. Yeah.
And I would say it's probably like it's great for a novelty game, but this is an example of
that's got too big for itself.
That's exactly what it is.
It's a good foundation for a game, but needs more going on. It needs things to do. Yeah.
And there are multiplayer bits and pieces here, but at the end of the day, it's really a £3 to £5 game that'll give you about an hour of fun and a good bit of streaming. Also, one thing I did find about it is that it's the Linux port didn't work for me, so I ended up running it in Proton, and it worked as good as native in Proton.
Yeah, it looks like it.
So I don't know, like I don't know how that stands in terms of the...
It sounds like you felt about this in the same way I felt about Undermine, which is just meh. It's fine, you know.
The first hour, good. I mean, but, you know,
it's gone down to $5.99 at its lowest in the last sale, apparently. So maybe that's the price to pick it up at. But yeah, it's the average. Okay, the average play time on Steam is 16 hours 1 minute, which is interesting.
Oh my word!
Yeah, so people like it. But that could just be a few mad bastards with loads of playtime affecting the average. I mean, that does happen.
Yeah, but I would imagine there's a lot of people that pick it up. Well, but here's the thing. Maybe this might have an effect, is that you kind of realize the limits of the game within the first 2 hours, which is that the limit for Steam refunds?
Yeah. So people are like, fuck it, I'll just keep playing. Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of people, like the average may be skewed by the number of people that took a refund. They, you know, picked it up, played it for an hour, realized, yeah, oh, okay, the joke's been had. But it's not worth the, you know, the 11 quid or whatever it is. So it's...
I like the look of the pirate level. I fancy beating the crap out of some pirates. I'm not going to lie. That sounds like something I can enjoy.
But you're not going to enjoy it for more than an hour. So I might come back to it. I might play it here and there. It might be one of those games where if you're doing a bit of a stream, it might be a bit of a wind down stream or a warm up type game. But really, I'd give it maybe a 3 or 4 out of 10.
Yeah. It's a shame. I think this is another example of the amount of indie games that, first off, early access that doesn't really mean anything is one of the things that you should have got, because it seems like this has been the same since I first heard about it. And the other thing that is, indie games need to kind of, games in general need to kind of understand how much they're actually worth. Because a lot of games seem to think they're £15 games and they're £6.99 games, you know? And this seems like one of them.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
this being £11.39 when Cogmines like £15, it's like Cogmines is obviously hundreds of hours of gameplay potentially, but this is obviously a couple of hours of gameplay, you know? So maybe, yeah, I feel, yeah. You'd probably be really positive if it was like £3.
Yeah. I do find it kind of interesting that it didn't necessarily work on Linux, and rather than doing any troubleshooting whatsoever, I just flipped it over to Proton and it worked.
I'm not going to lie, there's been times when a game's run fine native and I've gone, I bet it runs better in Proton. I just tried it. And it has. It's a peculiar one, isn't it?
Disagree. Actually, I think it kind of should. Like, I mean, I think it was either you or Drew who said that that this is the Linux way of solving a problem, is Proton, an open source tool that bridges the gap between Windows and Linux. I mean, to me, I actually almost prefer Proton over native ports in a lot of instances, and I certainly prefer Proton to bad native ports. Like, if you're not going to, you know, we are completely at that stage now where
we don't need ports for the most part.
If you're a small indie developer studio or a one-man team, I feel that it's not good for the Linux community to put pressure on them to release a Linux port when we can do that work, basically.
Yeah.
When we have done that work, when we have a template. So, I just wish that Itch would do something kind of similar to that. But I don't think it will even let me download a game in the client if it's not supported by my operating system. I have to go to the Itch.io website, download the actual package file, run it through Wine, which almost always runs fine, and do it that way. So I don't know. I think, you know, and it doesn't even have to be Proton. It could just be Wine.
It must be. We can't. I mean, it seems like we're in the minority with this attitude of, we don't really care about native, right? And often I get hundreds of comments on YouTube that tell me that people don't like this, right? But I think the reality is, I think enough people don't care that Valve didn't think it was necessary to distinguish between a Windows and a Linux game on the new Steam client. Like, you know, they didn't see the point. Like, in the update, there's no way of telling. You have to go to the store page to tell. And I think that's quite telling, and that's quite a big deal.
Yeah, but also this is a little bit of how the internet and discourse on the internet kind of works, is that the opposition to something is usually a lot more vocal than the agreement to something. So all the people that are just like, fine, I'll just play my game on Proton, I'm having the time of my life, they're not going to go on internet forums and go, no tax, no bucks.
I mean,
they're, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're not angry about anything, so they don't want to shout. That's the ultimate. The angry people want to shout, yeah. and the vocal minority are definitely overwhelming with this, which is a shame.
Yeah,
yeah.
The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Absolutely. Fucking wheels. Hashtag wheels damn, of crap. hashtag anti wheels. But before we move on, I would like to hear about Hitman 2 Halloween Pack. What's this about? What's this Hitman Halloween 2 Pack?
So Hitman 2 is a game that does keep releasing quite a lot of new updates, pretty much every month at this stage. It is a game that also runs flawlessly on Proton. And quite frankly, I think that IO Interactive decided not to bring out this game on Proton, decided not to bring out this game natively, partly because it does work on Proton. Like when I see bug reports and all that kind of stuff for Proton, occasionally I'll see a Hitman 2 thing there. So it looks like Hitman 2 is one of those games that Valve are actually trying to give us a smoother experience as possible. But Hitman 2 recently brought out the Halloween pack, where you actually get to haunt someone's dreams, which is kind of cool. It's part of so you have to buy the add-on pack that gives you these updated extra missions. But they basically dress you as someone who has the head of a pumpkin, and you're in this long sort of like exorcist coat with the hat. I think you have the hat on. I can't remember. I think you've got the hat on. Anyway, you go sneaking around this person's dream, and you have to sort of torment them. So you start off by just hitting them with a baseball bat, and then you push them off a roof, and then you sacrifice them to a circle of angels. And it's done pretty well, actually. And there have been a few more updates as well around that time. They've also brought in a bank heist level, which is really cool. So you can actually... You do get to rob the bank. You actually just rob a hard disk drive from the bank. In the main level of it, that is. But it's really cool how they did it. Like, there are a few stages to it, and it's not like a huge involved process like Ocean's 11 or anything like that. But it's about time that they actually had a bank vault level, because I kind of feel that's a little bit overdue. But it is in that comic Hitman style, where you can just start stuffing gold bars into your pockets. You go in there, you go, okay, here's the mission data while I'm here, and you're just sort of walking out of there. Like,
you kill someone with gold bars. You kill someone with gold bars.
You can. I think you just knock them out. But yeah, you can just like chuck them at someone from across the room. It's like doof, they're out. And I've also been playing a lot of the Ghost Mode, which is the Hitman 2 multiplayer, and that works flawlessly as well. And basically, what you do, you get given 5 targets. And you have to kill them all as quickly as possible. If you kill a target, your opponent then has, I think, something like 20 seconds that they also have to kill the target to match the point. Otherwise, you move on to the next target.
Is that like asynchronous multiplayer? Like, you do it and then people can download your playthrough, or do you have to have single, like, multiplayer, live multiplayer?
It's multiplayer, live multiplayer. So it's like called Ghost Mode. Because the other person you play it with, they're a ghost, like, you know, when you play racing games and they have the ghost mode there. So you can't really interact with the other person's game world. You get to see them in the world, you get to see where they are, you get to see what they're doing, but you don't get to see their world around them. So you don't know if they're in a gunfight, other than if you were to look at them and they happen to be shooting around. So there are like clues that you can use. You can work out which direction they're going to an objective. You can work out to tell what disguise they are, what equipment they've got. So, you know, in a lot of cases, it's the person that gets the best disguise and the best weapon early on, and they get that huge advantage. The thing is, it's not super silent assassin-y like what you would get with the single player. It's a bit more wacky and like a mad goose chase type of thing, where suddenly you're running and you have to kill someone, but you only they have to be undiscovered for, like, I think it's like 5 or 10 seconds afterwards, but only 5 or 10 seconds. So you just leave them behind a hedge or something like that. Someone will find them in about a couple of minutes' time. But it won't matter. So then suddenly you've got people running around going, oh, I found a dead body. Ah, what are we going to do? Ah. And then chaos ensues, and you've still got to carry on through the game, which is really good. The only criticism I would level at it is that, you know, once you start getting to the 3-0 territory, the game is kind of, in a lot of cases, it's not always, you know, a foregone conclusion, but it would be better if it's maybe first to three rather than first to five. The really close games, first to five is great, but a lot of the times it matches you randomly with other people on the internet, and there is usually quite a skill disparity, which is fine. I'm the kind of person that loves playing against people who are better than me. I got to admit, I don't want to brag. I'm probably
no one's better than you.
No, there are plenty of people that are better than me. And the thing is, as well, if you're tired or you're streaming and you're having, you know, you're distracted by the chat or something, then you know you sort of open the door to get your ass kicked in a way there. It's really good. It is quite. I do say that it's quite. It requires a decent amount of system resources. I've got the NVIDIA GTX 970 and a Ryzen 7 processor, which is pretty good. The processor is pretty good, so it doesn't require super hardware. And the processor is probably more than it, you know, is overpowered for the game. But
every time we speak about this, I say this, but I've got I don't have Hitman 2. I only have the free version, but I've got Hitman 1. I'm gonna have to make an effort. I might get Chris to do tutorial, and then I'll do the tutorial. That could be fun, because I kind of have problems understanding the scope of Hitman. Because I kind of walk into 11, I'm like, well, fuck Diviner. You know, I can't think like the game thinks. So I think we need Chris to do a tutorial for Hitman.
A tutorial for normal people.
Tutorial for humans. Yeah, Hitman for humans.
Especially if you, because I grew up with them. Like the first game I got was the Hitman 2 Silent Assassin, and then I went backwards before I went forwards and all that kind of stuff. But I know you get into a sort of an asymmetrical relationship with the developers in a way. You work out how they think. You work out how it's almost like if you do the crossword for a newspaper, and like over a couple of weeks, you realize the sort of the thought process that the person designing the puzzles puts into the clues. It's a little bit like that. You sort of second guess the thought process of the developers of the game as well. You sort of second guess the knock on reactions of various things in the world. So, for example, because I played the game so much, I might have an idea about what happens if I explode that car over there, who it's going to distract and how it's going to distract them.
Whereas most people won't. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it is a game that does require practice. That's absolutely true. And it is the sort of the epitome of a cult classic game, in that it's not going to appeal to everybody, but the people who it does appeal to will absolutely fall over themselves for it. And this is one of the very few games I bought at launch, and I probably paid the best part of, I don't know, 75, 80 quid for it. And that's more than I've ever paid for a game before. And I do not regret it a second. Like, I've got something like 300 hours clocked on it, if not more, and I'll probably have many, many more to come there as well. I recommend anyone picks up the demo. There is a free demo. It's not representative of the big expansive missions. It gives you a small mission to play around with, and it's a little bit of a gloomier mission than what you might expect from a lot of the other games. I kind of like the bouncy, colorful, there's almost like a jet setting, enjoy the world kind of feel to it. It's like, visit the world, go to Mumbai or Vermont or the rainforests of Colombia and enjoy killing, you know, interesting and powerful people. And it's
I like what Linus Paul saying in chat here. Stream idea: Chris teaches Hex how to play Hitman. The stream, that could be a lot of fun. Actually, we might have to do
that. Would be a lot of fun. I'm totally up for that.
We should do that. That'd be fun, especially given that I have a tendency to shoot things as soon as I see them. So it could be quite. It would be entertainingly frustrating for you, I think. I'd have a great time. I'm like, okay, I've got a gun. Boom. No, you've just killed the wrong person.
You can poison them. You can blow them up. You can electrocute them. You name it.
I'll tell you what, Chris. I genuinely would like you to teach me how to play Hitman. We should actually do this as a video, I think, because people in chat are like, yep, that sounds great. So, yeah, I think we should actually make a point of doing this next week sometime.
I'm 100%, 100% down for that.
I've only got the first one. Would that be okay to use, do you think, or should I, or should we... he's going to make me buy the full Hitman game now, isn't he, for 70? No, let's forget that.
I've got half a mind to gift it to you when it goes on the Black... What's the Black Friday stream, Cyber Monday stream?
Don't give me a £72 game. Don't do that. Don't do that.
I'll tell you what. There's a starter pack there. Actually, I think you can buy level by level.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's more appealing, or like you buy.
Yeah, there's a starter pack here which seems to be free. So that's probably got the first level. So maybe we could use the first level to learn. That might be all right.
Yeah,
and we'll see how it goes.
Although saying that, Miami is one of the best levels ever, which is the level after that. How much does it give you the individual level price?
I'm just checking now. Let's have a look. Miami. Hits Bay, Hits Bay, Mumbai, Miami is a it doesn't give you an individual level price. You have to buy the entire franchise for that. Its historical low is £18.95. So maybe on Black Friday we'll pick it up because it's £18.95 is a reasonable amount of money. So anyway, we've talked about Hitman too much again, Chris. We've done it again. We do this whenever we get talking about this. I don't even play it, and you make it sound great, and it makes me want to play it.
It is wonderful, and you love the costumes you can dress up as.
I do see the pink bird thing. Anyway, I have one more game to add this week, and then we'll move on a little bit. Mm-hmm. Ozone gifted me Odd Realm this week, right? And I must apologize already to Ozone because I tried to stream it last night and got deeply distracted by the nonsense in our voice call when we was all just chatting shit about Linux and stuff, and stream chat was chatting to us. And I basically just spent 2 hours not doing anything in the game. So I feel like I should apologize to Ozone because I didn't give his game enough attention. And I will be rectifying that Monday morning. I will be sitting down and sort of watching some tutorials and learning to play it properly, because the game that I did play, what I've played of it so far, seemed excellent and didn't seem to rush the player, which I really like. So I didn't give it anywhere near enough time. So yeah, I will be looking at that again Monday, Ozone. Don't worry, I promise. All in all, it's one that it looked great. The pixel art was great. The interaction, it seemed like RimWorld, but with way less imperative and way less necessary sort of obsessing about things. I'll hopefully give it some more. Did you see any of the Oddworld stream, Chris?
No, I was streaming at the same time, and you'll never guess what I was streaming.
It was Hitman, wasn't it?
It was Hitman. Yeah.
I really have to give that some more attention. But other than that, though, I think that's are we through our games list? Is that the end of our game list?
Seems about it.
Yeah. Okay. So that's good. Mm-hmm. And we're 47 minutes in. We're right on schedule, Chris. We're doing it well.
Oh, brilliant.
We're doing it well. So we've got a few news items this week, but one more than news items. Chris and I had a talk. I think it was on stream. We was talking about RSS readers, right? And I've been a fan for a long time of Newsboat as my RSS reader of choice, which is just like a text-based thing. But one of the limitations of it is the fact that it's local to my PC. And while there are ways to clarify it, it's not really designed to be used on mobiles and to be used anywhere other than on the desktop or in the terminal. So I've always used InnoReader as my feed reader sort of thing. But you're a big fan of Feedly, aren't you?
I am. Yeah.
So this got us to thinking, and I had a bit of a, I went on a bit of a deep dive. So let me summarize what I know very quickly about these, Chris, and you tell me if that falls in line with what you think. So going in order, the ones I'm most familiar with, Newsboat, really just designed for a desktop PC, text-based, very good for console jockeys and people like me who just really like terminal applications. Not really very good as an actual read. Like, it's not feature-packed beyond like the standard you expect. It's competent, but not amazing. Yeah. Then we've got the old reader, which was a response to Google Reader closing down. It's the cheapest subscription of all of them. We'll talk about why they have subscriptions shortly. And it is very traditional, very much like Google Reader. What it lacks, however, is a good mobile app. The mobile app is not great. You can log into the website, which works fine, but it's not really the same. There's no alerts. There's no real mobile app. The third-party apps out there, they're not amazing. They didn't really enamor me. InnoReader is lesser known but very competent. Lacks curation. Like, it won't curate your posts into more digestive stuff. It's got a reasonable subscription fee, but it also has tiered payments. So you can have one subscription. When you upgrade to the basic subscription to get rid of the ads, it'll then start advertising the next tier up, which is quite annoying, but it is very, very competent. Then we have your one of choice, Chris, which is Feedly, which, while very expensive compared to the others, does a bloody good job. I mean, it is a very good read. It's probably the best one of all the ones I've tried. So does that all fall in line with your understanding of these things?
Exactly. Yeah, very much so. But I do have to. I mean, the Feedly app is every bit. You know, like it.
Really
it,
good. Yeah.
It is really good, and it's really, really quite easy. And I think I do quite like Newsboat, but Newsboat does fall down on text only, because it depends. A lot of it depends on how you use RSS as well. Yeah. Like, I use RSS for everything.
Yeah.
And you know, photo blogs, text blogs, a lot of YouTube channels, because like I'm subscribed to about 300-350 YouTube channels. Mm-hmm. And that's great when I'm watching YouTube and all this kind of stuff. But there's a few channels that they'll only post once or twice a year, but what they do post once or twice a year is really good. Mm-hmm. But that could easily get lost in a subscription feed on YouTube. So I'll have a special list of people that post irregularly but really good content, and I'll just check it every when I'm looking for something to watch once in a while, and then maybe if I'm lucky I'll catch, you know, something that they've done without having to trudge through the YouTube, you know, way of doing things. What else do I use it for? I use it for following forums as well. You've got loads of like RSS is like so versatile.
Yep.
And it's to be honest, like occasionally you'll hear people say that RSS is dead, but like nothing could be further from the truth.
RSS is under advertised. It's not dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's under advertised because it's not in and of itself a brand, and it doesn't have a marketing department and all that kind of stuff. But it is used a lot, even if it's just used by applications picking up streams from other applications. And one of the beautiful things about RSS is that it is really simple syndication. Like on my website, chrisware.uk, a little bit of a self plug there. What I have done is I've got an RSS feed of all the podcasts that I've been a guest on, including, of course, X-Penguin. And you can actually subscribe to that feed. So, but it links in to all the thing. And I write it by text. I write it by hand. I just go into the NeoCities editor, and I'm just like, and I add in like the four tags of necessary. So yeah, you can see it right there, the podcasts and shows I've been on. And there's an RSS link right at the top of it. And then it just takes you, and there you go. You can actually see the text. There it is, and it's and I've added a few extra bits and pieces there. I've added like the ID, so that if I change anything, like a title or whatever, it doesn't then re-go into your RSS feed. So it's, you know, RSS is absolutely wonderful. But the thing about Feedly as well is that you've got like magazine view, you've got compact text. Yeah. Text only view, you've got all this kind of stuff. You can filter out stuff as well. You can filter out words. So if you're a bit of a news hound but you don't want to hear anything about Brexit, then you could obviously filter out something like that. And also you can, you know, sort things out really well. You can theme it. There are open source applications. I'm not too familiar with them that actually can use Feedly as a reader. Now, as you say, Hex, it is rather expensive. I think I pay about £60 a year for it. However, since I work as a local journalist and there are countless websites for like various village halls and gardening associations and all this kind of stuff that I want to keep up to date with, I get the money's use so quickly. Yeah. Like it's just...
This is the point where there's going to be confusion in chat here about this. Now, RSS readers, all of them, all the ones we've mentioned, absolutely 100%, can be used for free, and it can be quite good for free. But because they are filtering and curating the list you give them, right? And most of them do it in a way, like Feedly's got a very unique way of doing it, where it shows you today's posts, and it presents things in a way that's very digestible. Now, they're not doing a lot of work, to be fair, but there is a back-end work. And because of that, obviously, there's a cost associated. So because of that, all of them have an upgraded version. Now, all of them on the basic seem to offer you 100 sources. That's 100 feeds you can add for free, right? Without any problems. Mm-hmm. And then usually you pay more and you get the unlimited tier pretty easily. Now, with Feedly, their pro tier is very expensive. Like I said, £60-odd a year at full price, but I'm sure it goes on sale and things. But it gives you unlimited sources, unlimited feeds, Google keyword alerts, power search, premium fonts you can do. And they also let you share with a bunch of services and integrate stuff. It's a lot of money though, whereas you get something in the ballpark with InnoReader for much less money. You do get something, you know, you get something way closer than that than most of them. But yeah, it's not, it's no, it's £20 a year for their bottom tier. It does lack the polish of Feely, though, I would say that. It does lack the polish of it.
Also, one of the things that I absolutely find wonderful with Feedly is that if a website doesn't have an RSS feed, you can use the Google keyword search tool to search for any new websites that come up under a website's domain and add it to the RSS list. So you can almost RSS feedify. That's a weird
RSS kind of feedify.
But you can actually turn a website that doesn't have an RSS feed into. You can still pick up new pages from it, which is also something that I find to be quite useful.
Absolutely.
And it's not. Yeah, I mean, I think almost all website. All website blogs and that kind of thing do have an RSS feed. Like every Mastodon account has an RSS feed.
You can RSS follow Reddit posts as well. So if there's a subreddit you want, you can turn that into an RSS feed with very little work. Yeah.
And also you can in order to get an RSS URL for a YouTube channel or playlist, there is a tutorial for it on my on my website. And also there are a lot of good third-party tools. So if you wanted an RSS feed for Twitch, you can go to twitchrss.appspot.com, and that will give you an RSS feed for Twitch. So whenever anyone's on Twitch, it'll give you both live and the VODs. And for Twitter, you can go to knitter.net, NITTER.net. And that will give you an RSS feed for Twitter accounts. So you can actually follow Twitter accounts without having to sign up to Twitter. It's win-win. So there are a lot of third-party open source tools that actually allow you to subscribe to things like Twitch and Twitter through RSS as well. So, I mean, it's...
One of the ones I forgot to mention as well is Comma Feed. If that's C-O-M-M-A-F-E-E-D. Mm-hmm. Comma Feed is... a super, super basic RSS reader. It is cloud-based, obviously, which gives it an advantage, but it is super simple. It is about the most simple thing you can use. It's like a scaled-down version of an old reader, but it is definitely, it's 100% free. It's actually hosted on GitHub, so it doesn't have a cost associated to it, but it's very basic on features. But I wanted to add that one because it is a good one. It is a good one. Ooh. I'll put that in with the deep dive as well. I must admit, I used to use InnoReader like all the time, like as my main way of getting news. And I fell out of that. I went over to Newsboat, and I'll be honest, because it's not on my phone as well as on my PC, I have found that I'm falling out of RSS. And then chatting with you the other night sort of put me back on the right track with that. I must say that it is a better way of getting your news, and you also get the news you want with RSS. If you're using Google News for your news, while you are getting like headlines and stuff, you're also not really having any control over what isn't shown to you. Where with RSS, with an RSS reader, you can go like, I don't really want to see politics if you don't, so you can just not add that to your feed. Whereas you can just will interlace all your other news nicely. So yeah, I must admit the Feedly is very polished. It's very, very polished, and it's very nicely done.
I mean, I use it several hours a day, so not just at work, but it will be. So that's about what, £1 something a week. I completely get the value for money out of it. And the thing is, though, if I didn't use it for work, I would reconsider a local option. I don't need massive polish like Lefiria would be good enough for me on a local level, but because I have probably the best part of four devices, keeping RSS, my RSS feeds synced, it would be a little bit of a project there. Although one of the real interesting benefits of the pro version of Feedly is that it in real time backs up your list, I think to a Dropbox folder or something like that, and you can also download and export the OPML list. Feedly does make it very easy for you to export your list of feeds as well. So it's not too, it doesn't have this desire to like lock you in or anything like that. It's very good.
I'll be honest. Now you've put me back into RSS. I'm probably going to go back to InnoReader for all the reasons I went to it the first time. It's substantially cheaper. Mm-hmm. It offers ballpark the same features as Feedly. And it does let you download your OPL file. So I'm probably going to end up back on InnoReader, to be honest. But that said, I would like it if there was some kind of method to interface this, like one of these things with Newsbow. That'd be nice to sort of, I don't know, somehow integrate, synchronize it somehow. But there doesn't seem to be anything like that at all, which is a shame. So. Anyway, we've talked a lot about this. I don't know. Do chat use RSS? Do people in chat use RSS? Do they have any thoughts on RSS? They don't seem to. Also, Egg Roll's here. Hello, Egg Roll. Hello, Egg Roll.
Hello, Egg Roll.
I sent you a DM the other day, Egg Roll. I hope you got that. I think you got that. I should probably check at some point. But yeah, I do wonder if chat use, because sometimes I feel like it's only the truly geeky that use RSS. Even though it's great and easy, I feel like we're in the minority quite massively.
Yeah, but RSS is one of those things that people use without knowing it.
Yeah,
you know, it's used in so much back end stuff, you know, like if this then that posters and all that kind of stuff, like that it's alive in the hearts of people, if not the minds,
whether they know it or not.
Whether they know it or not, yeah. it's like nitrogen. It's like you don't think about that you're breathing it in all the time, that it's a part of your every waking moment, but RSS is.
Right. Yeah. So sorry, I got distracted by chat then. I hope chat use RSS. I hope they use RSS. And I hope they, I just kind of hope it's not just us. Although Cyrus is like, no, okay, so Chris, this is a good point. Cyrus just said the thing that lots of people say, okay? No, my browser comes with a bookmark feature. What do you want to tell them why RSS is better than bookmarks? I mean, you know, it's obvious when you use it, but tell them why a reader's better than bookmarks.
Well, I've got like 300 bookmarks. Am I going to go through each one day in, day out, just to see if one website has been updated? The thing is, I can get that, like, in the sort of the hyper information age in which we live, all of these feeds might not necessarily always be like the healthiest thing for our minds. Mm-hmm. And that there's plenty of reasons why you might want to step away. But then again, there's plenty of things I don't want to forget, or I don't want out of my life through complacency. And I think RSS readers do actually help with that quite a lot. I am deeply disappointed with Firefox for taking out their RSS links, their RSS bookmarks.
Yeah, that was quite nice, wasn't it? Yeah, I feel like Firefox is exactly the sort of thing that should have baked in RSS, and it doesn't seem to want to go that way. But then again, maybe Mozilla should have their own tool anyway. Yeah. So moving on to newsy type stuff, though. Now we've done our little RSS rant. Valve rolls out a new Steam Library beta. So the beta for the Steam Library that we've all had is now just the Steam Library. And you know what? People are livid. They fucking hate it. I don't know why. I respect that people don't like it. But to me, I'm like, there are problems with it. Like, the performance is a bit shit in general and stuff. But the actual layout, I kind of like it. And I know, Chris, you're not too bothered by it either, are you?
I mean, it launches the games.
It's like, yeah.
To be honest, though, I do see Steam as a games rental service anyway. So I don't consider it an application too close to my heart anyway. If it just runs the game, it runs the game, that's fine. It doesn't seem to have hindered that operation for me, so life goes on.
Yeah, I know people are livid, because I when it first came into beta, I scrambled and made a video with my first impressions of it, right? And my impressions were generally positive. I liked it. I thought it needed some work in places, but overall I was happy with it, right? And people have been finding that video, now it's gone out to the masses, and they are livid, and they are telling me they're livid in comments. A few people, for some reason, blame me personally for the Steam Library update, which is a bit confusing for me. Yeah, I know, right? What a dick. I'm still of the mindset that if you put your hand over the main bit, right, and just look at that bar on the left, literally nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. It's still just a bar with games on that you can launch games with. But I think the integration has improved.
The thing that they have changed that I do actually like is that you can list games that you've never played.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I use that as well. Yeah, good idea.
So,
But yeah, you've got versatility, you've got ability to list, and you've got kind of, if you click on a game, you can scroll down and see the community hub, which was just lost before. You had to go looking for hubs before. So I like that's front and center. And there's more I like than don't like. The performance is a bit shitty. And if you turn on low performance mode and low bandwidth mode, it is a lot snappier, which I like. But they may have fixed that because I've just left it on since I turned it on. So they may have fixed that by now. But yeah, people are livid. It's a shame. But I feel like Valve probably should have included a retro mode or an old-fashioned mode for it. But at the same time, they're trying to push forward with things. And even if you don't like it, like, how much time do you spend in Steam? The people who are livid about it, I'm like, you just launch your fucking games and don't worry about it. I don't understand the livid people. I just don't.
Oh, I've got low performance mode on it anyway.
Yeah, low performance mode stops the stalling that happens. If you put full performance mode, it adds a lot of transparency effects, which cause it to stop responding occasionally, which is annoying.
Oh, I think I just turned on low performance mode like day one, and so maybe that's why I don't seem to mind about it, you know, because it's like, I think you did mention it last time I was on. It was I think I did it on your recommendation, and haven't really thought about it ever since. I mean, this might also be one of those things where the squeaky wheel gets the grease, that that people like me who are just fine with it just, you know, get on with it, because it's like Valve and Steam, they can't win in this scenario, right? They stick with the same interface for the rest of time, and people say that it's stale or that it's abandoned or that they don't care, or they update it, and there's always going to be people that are livid over it, that for some reason take a personal offense that Valve have decided to move around their digital furniture. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, it is ultimately a launcher in a shop. I don't have, as long as I can find the games and that they've left that functionality intact, I'm not too bad. Cybrus is glad he's not in voice, because he's one of the ones that's livid. He's not a fan of it at all. And again, I respect people not being a fan of it, but I think also it's about time Valve did something, so I'm happy with it. Kyle Linux says actually two things. First off, Falmir says you can run Steam. There's a command here, you can launch steam:// /open-mini-game-list to get an even more stripped down version of it. That seems good. I'll try that and see how that looks. Maybe that'll help Cybrus out as well. And then Kyle Linux said, I wonder if Valve is working towards merging big picture mode with the standard client. Yes, I hope they are, because the fact there's basically two Steams that have different features is stupid. It's deeply, deeply ridiculous, and it annoys me, and I don't know why. Because I like big picture mode. I genuinely like it. I'd actually run in big picture mode all the time if it wasn't so fucking shit with other things. So yeah, mixed feelings there. But big picture mode is fine, in my opinion. It's fine. But it lacks the... It's very much designed for controller. And like, if you get big picture mode but more mouse-centric, I'd probably run that as my main Steam. So yeah. Anyway, how do you feel about big picture mode, Chris? You've never said anything about big picture mode.
I rarely use it because I'm just, you know, I'm mouse and keyboard. I always felt that big picture mode was one for more gamepad centric UI. So it's just never been much for me. I've the only time I've ever picked up a controller really is the Steam controller, which does actually work quite well with Morrowind. I always love playing Morrowind with the Steam controller, because it is such a slow burn that it does kind of, you know, you've got it does work especially well in that regard, or when I crack open the old PS2 or original Xbox. But to me, mouse and keyboard with the old trackball is really where it's at for me, but just, you know, personal preference and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Also, Kyle says he feels like the way the library looks makes him think they're running a user experience test on us to ease us all into a merge of the two. Yeah, I think that's probably not a bad idea either. That's probably a good halfway house between original Steam. Yeah, I do still think that, even now, I still think that Steam is shit, and they should have done a full rebuild on Steam, not just the fucking interface page. I mean, this is basically a web page. They should have redesigned the whole fucking thing, because that's what we're waiting for, really. I don't think I'd even mind Steam if it's Steam turned into an electro application. Given there is literally four running games, I wouldn't even be that outraged. At least we'd have feature parity, and the fact that we don't have Steam broadcast on PC on Linux still is an insult at this point. So yeah, I thought that's worth mentioning.
Well, of course, you know, a lot of Valve's business ethos is is anti-Microsoft or protection from Microsoft. And of course, Electron, am I right in saying that Electron is owned by
it's a GitLab project, yeah. It's a GitHub project,
GitHub project.
Microsoft own it, so
So they probably would not be keen on Electron, because if they decided to stick two fingers up to Microsoft and go all
this is the power of open source. Electron's completely open source, right? So if they use Electron and Microsoft become evil, it doesn't actually matter. They've still got their code. It's not like they take it off them. So the power of open source means they could go Electron if they wanted to. And not all Electron apps are bad. As Linux Paul's pointed out in chat, the itch client's Electron, and it's literally a great application without any caveats.
So very true,
But the power of open source means they could use Electron or some other thing. I mean, there's got to be a Firefox. Is there a Firefox equivalent? Because Electron's Chromium-based, right? Is there a Firefox equivalent of Electron? Is that a thing we can do?
Not that I know, but it should. There should be.
It absolutely fucking should be. Absolutely.
I know that, is it Epiphany? They have kind of that for WebKit, don't they? Where you can actually have web apps and you can separate them into a separate process, give them an icon and that kind of thing. Not quite the same as Electron, admittedly, but...
And Hamish has just called me out. Did Hex say if Microsoft becomes evil? Okay. I meant more evil. There you go. I actually meant a toxic and abusive. Oh, never mind.
Well, toxic and abusive, I assume you meant it as in evil from the point of view of Valve, who are in themselves, not above criticism.
Nano 991 in chat says Doki Literature Club's community page is pretty weird. Mate, keep scrolling down. That shit gets weirder and it only gets better. It's great. By the time you're at the pits, like the lower levels of their community page, it's just fan porn. It's just fan porn and it's wonderful. Great. Microsoft love Linux. Yeah, they do. They love Linux. The other little quick in passing here, the Steam client beta has had an update. This is interesting. Demos now automatically remove from the library when you uninstall. So when you uninstall a demo, it doesn't stay in the library forever. That's been annoying me for like 5 years, that has. Deleting and managed screenshot options have been added to the context menus, which is nice. Fixed library not redrawing when switching between Steam panels. That was one of the things that Low Performance Mode already fixed. And then Linux specific fixes is fixed accepting a remote play together invitation. So remote play together is in theory fixed on Linux. I have found it to be janky, to say the least. I found it to be mixed successes with it. It seems to have a bit of a bug where the audio is merged where it shouldn't be. So like while I'm talking to Chris now on Discord, right, when I load the game up and invite Chris in, I should be able to use Discord normally and have the game sound on Chris's end, but Chris will hear me through Discord and through the game, which seems to be a bug they are tracking. I have checked that. So yeah, that is a thing. But and also there's some other things where I'm on tiling window managers. Sometimes it won't. It'll float a window with an invite code thing, and then that window will stay on top of the game no matter what you do. So there's a few little janky little bugs that we have to need sorting out, and I'm sure we'll report them and get them fixed. But all in all, Steam Remote Play is working. Broadcasting isn't, which is the same fucking thing. But Steam Play Together is, which is nice. So any interest in Steam Play Together, Chris, or just when I make you play with me?
Quite possibly. I'm very much in the camp of wait for it to sort of pan out. I did watch you and Kai play the Outrunny game, and that did look pretty cool. And it did look like you managed to get it working at a decent, in a decent capacity. So I see promise.
Yeah. And that was, I think that's because Kai's not, I think it might be a DWM specific problem. I have to do some more troubleshooting. But I mean, Cyberus and I tried. I just kept getting this fucking overlay window that wouldn't go away. And we had all sorts of audio problems. So I must try that some more. And Cyberus, have you tried using GNOME? No, but I think I might install GNOME to test for a video. So I might end up installing GNOME just for a video, not because I actually want to use it. I'm very happy on Tyler's. They're wonderful and they make me happy. And I want to be a happy Linux user.
Although, for God's sakes, they got to get that streaming thing up and running soon. I mean, it's not that difficult. They could even embed the broadcaster stuff in it. Valve are no strangers.
The thing is, the Steam client can already broadcast because when you do remote play, you're broadcasting your screen to someone else. So it's already working. All they've got to do is use that same bit of code and move it. It's just laziness, and there's no other excuse. Mm-hmm. There's
I'm sure they'll work out laziness. How copy and paste works soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Ozone said, "You're wonderful and make us happy, Hex." Thank you, Ozone. Fuck you too,
buddy.
Don't fall for it. He's going to turn. He's like a cat. You'll pet him. He'll grin, and then he'll bite your fucking hand off. It's what he does it all the time. He's abusive. Yeah. And anyone who doesn't watch the show regularly is like, why is he so mean to Ozone? Ozone's lovely. Why is he so mean? No, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Like our next class says, give Steam Remote Play a bit longer in the oven and it'll be one of the best products next to Steam Play. I think that's probably true. I think Remote Play will end up using it regularly and not really realize it eventually, but the jank is real, but it's fine to be janky. It is fine to be janky. Just as long as you're janky and getting better, not janky and getting worse, or in the case of broadcasting, not janky and not working, that's fine. So, yeah. Yeah, Cyrus is now shouting Ozone in chat. Good work, guys. We have one more thing I want to talk about, Chris, unless there's anything you want to add to this topic. One more thing. You ready? Or do you want to add anything? Any final thoughts?
I don't think I have any final thoughts, so I'm ready for the...
Okay. Brian Kernighan, who I am something of a fan of, one of the godfathers of Unix, has written a book. There's a reasonably quick and easy write-up of this on Hackaday, which I read and thought, that's a good picture. I'll let them all see that. So I embedded this article. But his book is called The Birth of Unix. And it sounds good. Brian's someone who has literally been in Unix before day one. He's got a lot of stories to tell. And this book is really just a memoir. The reason I'm mentioning it, guys, is because I know a lot of people who follow this channel... they use e-readers, and the reality is it doesn't really work on e-readers, which sounds like nonsense, right? But if you go down here, you'll find that it's available on Kindle. And when you look on Kindle, it says only supported devices, and it talks about Kindle Fires. The EPUB version of it, so the electronically published version of it, not the EPUB specifically, is not Kindle supported because it is literally scans of the page, essentially. It's digitized versions of the page rather than raw text. So if you do want to use this on a Kindle, you can't, unfortunately. It just pissed me off a great deal because I really want to read this book, but I have no desire to kill a tree for a book. So yeah, mixed feelings there. Yeah, Chris has no thoughts. He's like, yeah, fuck that. I'm not kidding. I don't care.
Yeah, no, I'm a paper book all the way.
See, I understand the logic, right, of paper books, and because like they're yours forever and no one can take them away. I get that, right?
Well, there's a personal preference that probably overrides all of that, to be honest.
Yeah, but like while you're correct, at the same time, I would rather not kill all them trees and just get an ebook that I will then rip and keep on my hard drive anyway. So it's not like it's any different to a paper book in that way. But you can read a book in like without electricity, so there is that as well. So, you know, maybe they're better.
Yeah, I mean, come the Brexit apocalypse, you'll be thankful for anything that you've got written on good old paper.
I don't know, because my Kindle's like lasts for a couple of weeks, and I've got a solar charger, so I'm probably fine. I've also got 500 books on there, so I'm not too concerned. That said, how long is the apocalypse going to last? Because I've probably got a few months worth of juice, you know.
It might only be a few months before we get bored of it, and then.
I've read enough now. Fuck off. Or I'll trade it for food or something. I'll give you this for a sandwich. Yeah. Anyway, the apocalypse is not that close. We're going to be fine. Humans are doing all right. Sorry.
Well, I mean, we could do with a few less humans, all things considered, anyway.
I've got a list, actually, if you want to start getting rid of people for me. Ozone.
I might as well get ahead of it.
Yeah, but the book, I'm kind of mardy because I wanted to read it digitally, but I'm probably going to end up ordering the digital version, even though people say the quality's shit. I'm probably going to end up buying the digital version, buying the print version, and you know, yeah. So I'll let you know the book is. But that's it. We're at the end of X Penguin. You can get Chris and all the things he does over on chrisware.uk. That's Chris Ware.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. I think mostly these days I just tend to stream here on Twitch. twitch.tv/chrisware. But I think you can, if I do hello in the chat there, sorry people on YouTube, you can then like click on my name next to it and do all that kind of business. But I think, to be honest, most people who watch X Penguin are already following me on Twitch.
Yeah, but, I think they do, and also I think most of the audience at this point don't watch Twitch on the Twitch website, so they can't click on your name. Most of them are probably watching through MPV and Chatty, I would hope, would assume.
Mm. Okay, well, it's, yeah, Chris Ware, C-H-R-I-S-W-E-R-E. But there's the link on the website, so...
Yep, there's a link anyway, so you can get that there. So, Chris, is there anything you're doing this week? Just streaming Hitman some more this week?
Probably. I'll be doing a recording of my podcast over on Project Chronicle. If you look at Project Chronicle on YouTube, you'll find the right place. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible podcast, much worse than this podcast, I got to say, where me and some people from around the world just talk about memes a lot.
I've shown notes. And intense.
You do have show notes. Yeah. We don't have show notes. We will have sometimes Scratch will then put some memes in from like 10 years ago, and then we'll just talk about them for ages. But it's one of those things where I'm sure I've talked about this before, since going getting a more 9-to-5-y type of job, I've allowed my YouTube stuff, my Twitch stuff to be a lot more amateurish and personal. Like you may have noticed, I've replaced the fancy sound dampening boards with just a cream colored curtain, and you know, I've almost amateurified a little bit there because it looks a little bit more homely. You know, it looks, I always felt like the sound dampeners were a little bit more like, you know, like those gamer chairs. Do you know those gamer chairs?
Oh, where they come around the head? Yeah.
They're terrible, you know. Like, so I kind of, you know, I've kind of made it a bit all a bit more amateurish and all a bit more. And I don't care who watches. I just make stuff now because I enjoy making it, and I do it with people who I enjoy the company of, and that includes, of course, hanging out with you and doing stuff like this as well. But also, you know, like streaming and everything that I do, because I don't get a penny for any of it now.
All for fun.
Has definitely. Yeah, so if you were subscribed to me on Patreon or anything like that, patreon.com/hexdsl is the place to be, because then you're supporting Hex, and I like hanging out with Hex, so it's kind of tangentially supporting me as well. So
yeah, there you go. And maybe this will help people decide to support me on Patreon. But after Christmas, at the end of January, maybe the beginning of January, I will be decorating. I will be replacing the carpet, moving some furniture, putting some comfy chairs and a reading nook in there, and when it's done, I'll do a Patreon only office tour that will be Patreon only for the first week. So if people care about that and want that, I need your money to make that happen. So maybe that'll help.
But yeah, I mean, so everything that I do now is purely for the love of the, you know, community and all that kind of stuff, and yeah, like streaming on Twitch and also on my YouTube gaming channel as well, like it doesn't hit the same number of views, not even close, to be honest, because the number of people who are in the Linux community that are also that are like Linux gamers as well is actually really quite small. Like a lot of us, we're all like aware of each other and all know each other, and your exciting project, which I don't know if we're talking about at the moment.
We can talk about my project. We can talk about. I'm not a secret. I'm open source. It's fine.
No, well, you've done it like how many years now anyway? Yeah, so, yeah. But you know where you get loads of people in the Linux gaming community, and we all put forward our Game of the Year compilation video. You know, it's wonderful projects like that. But but it is quite a small community, and I do kind of like that. That's one of the things that does appeal to me about open source games in a way, is that the communities are so small that you do actually get to know each other really quite well, whereas with the bigger, you know, like your Fortnite communities and, you know, the other end of the scale, they're just so big that they're sort of they're a bit soulless, all things considered.
Yeah, I think in the general gaming world, you've got a bunch of streamers are all disconnected. Then you've got like tiers, like you've got the people that get all the views, and they're like their own little club. Mm. And then you've got the next tier down, and it's kind of self-segregating in a very unfortunate way that I don't think is particularly healthy. People just don't want to hang out. Where in Linux, people just hang out. You don't really care how many subscribers people have got. You just like, your content's cool, let's hang out. And that's kind of what I try and put together in my Discord. And I think we've done all right. I think we've done all right mostly.
I think we've done great. It's absolutely wonderful and thoughtful, and you know, even you know, regardless of that big sign on the mind test server, I think Cybrus is lovely.
no,
I don't think he's that thing at all, if I'm completely honest. But
for anyone though that wants the show notes this week, here is a link to every tab I had open during the making of the show. That's a little plug-in thing that just gives a list, just a nice little list of everything we had. So if you want to see any of the links we talked about today, there they all are. There you go. You can get all of them there. So do have a look at that if you're interested.
Absolutely.
Yep, that's the end of X Penguin. Thank you for watching. Don't forget to check Chris's stuff out. There's a link to his website at the bottom of that OneNote thing, that one page thing. There's someone just joined. So Razor Legend just joined and said hi. I'm sorry you've missed the show as such. If you stick around though, I'm going to put a BRB screen up, and then I'm going to go for a piddle. And then for those of you that are watching live, you can come to the after show, which will go on for about 9 o'clock. If you're not watching live, you miss the after show. That's what you get. What you get for being for not being here. I'm sorry.
And I'll be around for the after show too.
Yay! Good night, YouTube.
Right.
Good night, YouTube.
Good night, YouTube. Sleep tight.